Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. It's Tuesday morning. We're two games into the Autumn Nations Series. Ireland back up and running, a 22-19 win against Argentina on Friday night. Fiji to come on Saturday afternoon at Aviva Stadium. First podcast of the week, and Johnny Holland and Johnny Murphy are both with me. Boys, you both had a very busy weekend. Johnny Holland, first of all, draw with Mary's on Saturday. AIL Division 1A. That table is shaping up almost the same as Johnny's 1B table had been in recent seasons. There's about eight teams in it at the moment, isn't there?
It's hectic, right? And I think, like, speaking to the other teams, everyone knows that teams are going to be beaten. Like, and Ballinhinch are top, right? And yeah. It's funny, we beat Ballinhinch 50-21. They went 14-0 up in 4 minutes.
And that's the only game they've lost.
Their only loss. And it was actually only down to discipline. It wasn't down to, like, quality, you know what I mean? So they're obviously very strong, but yeah, everyone's getting beaten, like, besides them at the moment. So if someone could just clip them once or twice, that'd be great for the rest of the league. But, like, it's hectic. Like, we always say about AIL that everyone can beat everyone, but you're really seeing it this year. Like, you know, so it's I think who said it to me before the game? I was talking with a couple of the St. Mary's lads, Connor Hayes, I think. And, you know, we were saying that everyone beats everyone and some crack kind of thing. And I was like, not as a coach, not some crack, you know, because there's no one that you can kind of take. Obviously, you can never take it handy, but, you know, it's, yeah, everyone's well up for it. So it's difficult, but very exciting, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you said, like, I'd say in years gone by, while you would have said everyone could beat everyone on a given weekend, I'd say by this stage of the season, in the last 2-3 years, there's been what looks like a top four or five emerging and kind of slowly breaking away. But geez, it's wild open this season. I'd say, never mind, anyone could be in the top four. Anyone could go and win it at this stage. Johnny Murphy, I know you don't want to dwell on what happened on Saturday, so I'll ask you about your Sunday. You had a very eventful Sunday. Tell us all about it. You dusted off the boots and got back out there.
Yeah, I did, yeah. We played in the 7-4-5 game for Ed Slater, Rob Burrow and himself, and the Doddy Weir Foundation. They came together and set up kind of a cross-code game. It was something that when Rob was still alive that Ed and Rob kind of came up with. And yeah, we played in Headingley. It was an incredible day. There was, you know, speaking beforehand, there was, you know, some like proper rugby league legends, you know, in that room. Keith Senior, Adrian Morley, Danny Maguire, Jamie Jones Buchanan. Like, the list of names that were playing for that Rob Burrow side was just incredible. Kevin Sinfield was there. He was doing some off pitch promotion of it. Yeah, it was just an incredible day, a very emotional day. Ed spoke before the game, and that was incredibly emotional. There's a video just for the players, for Rob Burrow's family were there, and a video of him. And yeah, it was a day that was full of sadness, but full of so much fun, so much joy, and just what is actually everything that's good about, you know, good about sport. Rob Burrow's son and Ed's son brought out the match ball. And I don't think of the 10,000 odd people that were there, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house. So an incredible day. Ed obviously fighting a very severe battle against MND, so trying to raise as much awareness around that and as much funds that can kind of get into you know, some research and hopefully find a cure for this horrific disease. You know, Paul Derbyshire was, he passed away of it my first year at Munster. And obviously there's been, you know, a number of rugby league and union guys that have suffered with it over the years. So, if there's anything, you can follow all the Instagram posts on the 7-4-5 game. And they're auctioning shirts and stuff after the game, match worn shirts all signed by the player. So if you're a rugby league fan, get on that site, because there's some proper memorabilia of some proper, proper players. So it was enjoyable. It wasn't that enjoyable having my pre-match dinner with Keith Senior when he said, lads, no ducking into contact. And we were like, why? And he's like, well, someone might take her head off. And we were like, oh, right, okay. So yeah, it was amazing. It was scratch an itch that I didn't even realize I had in terms of, you know, putting on the boots and enjoying running out to Smoke on the Water, the Leicester Tigers song. And then,
when did you last have the boots on and out there playing?
I played in the Irish England Old Boys game
Oh,
last
yeah.
year. That was kind of walk on, walk off stuff. There wasn't that kind of a there was a nervousness associated to this because it was kind of they were worried about our chop tackle and we were very much worried about someone getting their head taken off. So and when you saw Tom Youngs and Luai run into each other, the Leeds prop, it was like, oh, here we go. So but yeah, look, scratch an itch. I can safely say that itch wasn't there yesterday morning when I woke up. So, but yeah, look, it was an incredible day, and hopefully we can raise as much money as possible.
Very good. Well, best of luck with that. And remind us again that the name of it for those who do want to get involved with it and look this up if they want to donate.
It's on the 745 game on Instagram. They've just started auctioning all the match shirts from Sunday, and there's loads of donation links on that Instagram page, and you can go for the Poor Ed Foundation or the Rob Burrow or Dodie Weir Foundation either.
Great stuff. Well, well done on that. And anyone who does want to get involved, follow those links. Let's get on to Ireland and Argentina then. Ireland 22-19 winners on Friday night, and Johnny Holland, a mixed bag, I suppose, is probably the best way of describing it. First 30 minutes, Ireland came out flying, scored three tries, 22-9 in front, playing some really, really good stuff, and ultimately left to hang on in the end. Andy Farrell said it was a three or four games rolled into one. I think that was probably the best way of describing it.
I didn't actually hear Andy Farrell speaking afterwards, but I was trying to, put logic on it as a coach. In your coach's mind, I think you have to try to understand what you were going after in these games. And we don't know that sometimes, I think, like I've said, that 22-19, if you had a couple more non-regular starters in that and you had that performance result, I think you'd be happy enough coming away from it. So I think the context is in what you put on the pitch. But I think the fact that it wasn't really that. Now you got two debutants, which I thought was very positive. And we can get into that. But considering it was a kind of quite a settled team, I think they'll be disappointed with the actual result and how they didn't kick on in the second half. But at the same time, I think what I mean by the coach's eye, like you can see opportunity in that. The Tyburn knock on, for example, would have really glossed the kind of scoreline a small bit. And then, you finish the game with 20 minutes of Sam Prendergast on his debut pulling the strings, if you want to put it that way. Now, they didn't get over the line, so that's probably the frustrating. And there's a little bit of conversation, I suppose, around the contact area, how Ireland aren't crossing the gain line as easily, I suppose. And then that kind of has a knock-on effect in not scoring in the second half, and then the game becoming a lot tighter. So when you think about it, as the coach might review it, it's not as hectic as what the public might think when you're scraping a knock on for the win in the end, but obviously they would like to flow a small bit more as well.
Yeah, and like Johnny Murphy, I don't want to obviously make this a Jack Crowley, Sam Prendergast podcast. I kind of joked about it last night as well when we were teeing up this, but like it is a nice st start point to go off because there has been a lot of talk around the out half situation in Ireland, and obviously just that there's a an open there's been an open spot there since Johnny Sexton retired, which Jack Crowley has firmly has in his hands at the moment, but there are other contenders out there. I think, regardless of who you think the option is long term, I'd say what most people came away from on Friday night was looking at two out halves that both played very, very well. Jack Crowley had some excellent moments, obviously scored his try, but even just looking around some of the other stuff, even the decision to take the drop goal later on in the half was a good, smart choice. Ireland had gone backwards on four or five successive plays after a sloppy line out, and that was just a, do you know what, take your points, get back to the halfway line and go from there, and had a really, really strong performance. And even though Ireland didn't score when Prendergast came on, he looked pretty fearless out there and looked to take on everything and had a nice little run down the blind side at one stage. Both out halves came out of that game looking pretty good.
Yeah, I think Crowley's performance in the first half was excellent. He controlled the game quite well. I think Johnny's 100% correct. If he scored that Tyburn try, then that's a really good half of rugby, really good body work, bar the discipline. I think then not scoring from whatever 30, 31 minutes on in the game, obviously you're focusing on why that is, what that comes from. There seems to be a lack of flow within Ireland when they do go back, that they kind of push it and they force it a bit. So like that crossfield kick against New Zealand that goes straight out, they have these execution errors that hurt them, and then discipline errors in attack like Jamie Osborne's break. Really good, well worked, good play, great play by him. But there's no one preempting that. And then we get done at the breakdown. Sam Prendergast, Sam's little kind of jink down the blind side, gets slightly isolated. We resource the ball first, and then we're slow to actually resource it second. We're worried about what's happening next rather than what's happening now. And they get driven off the ball, and it's a penalty, and that opportunity is gone. So that happened quite a lot against New Zealand, a lot in terms of, you know, how well I felt New Zealand cheated and they didn't get Pinkford in terms of their tip-ons and tips under, that people are getting in their way and they're blocking the Irish runners to the breakdown, and that's giving people windows. And there was a bit of that again this weekend, and if Ireland don't dominate the ruck and attack, it's very hard. The speed of ball then isn't quick enough for them to kind of play on top and push the gain line. Because as everyone said, we've got big guys, but we're not a massive side. So collisions have to come from time contact, winning the gain line, and then adding your weight in the contact. And if you're plussing or minusing in your three-man shape, you lose that opportunity to add weight into that. But you're trying to get into get gain line, and then you're late to the ruck. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword there. But I think from an attack, not scoring in the second half or from 30 minutes, I'd say they'd probably be a bit disappointed with. But it just, when Ireland get in flow, like you saw the other night, and there was only probably 2 or 3 minutes against New Zealand where they got in that, incredibly dangerous, and they're brilliant to watch. And speed of ball are so quick. They've multiple options left and right, both sides. They have short and out the back door options. But they're just lacking that bit of killer instinct at the moment, for whatever reason, in my opinion, that they're just letting teams back in the game. Discipline, but also just that ruck time. They're just slowly off at ruck time in terms of their clear outs and stuff.
Right, well, like, and on that then, that actually tees up nicely. So we got a tweet in yesterday evening around this from C-Mac Sporty. I'll throw it out to whoever wants it. Either one of you wants to jump in. Are Ireland resourcing the ruck correctly? And if so, why are they running out of ideas after 4 or 5 phases? So, Johnny, obviously that comes back to what you were just saying there about how, you know, Jamie Osborne, for example, had 2 really, really good carries that ultimately ended up being penalties against him for holding on. Sam Prendergast got caught on that one as well. Are Ireland, as you say, then resourcing the ruck correctly?
And certainly when they are in full flow, yes, and it works, and they're on top of the gain line, they're winning gain line carries, they're adding weight into it, they're taking guys early. You look at the one last week where, you know, Finlay Beelan misses a clean. That's just pure exhaustion, where in that contact he needs to add weight into that, go past the ball, and then that's ball that's ready to play. It's the ones where we get the half breaks that Ireland were brilliant. When, you know, in the lead up to the World Cup and in patches at the moment, they're really good at preempting that half break and either chasing that offload or being there to kill the breakdown straight away so then we can move it. And they're just slightly off on that. And that's whether, you know, they're only played, this is only their second game back together. But, you know, I don't know. Like, it's. Are we going to see it get better every week? And then, you know, maybe against Australia, that's when it's going to be in full flow. But at the same time, I just think that, yeah, they're just slightly off that. And maybe it's new combinations. You know, they're obviously changing 10 every game. Their centre pairing hasn't been the same for a while with Jamie and different guys coming in. So maybe it's a combination issue in terms of guys playing with each other and understanding, well, he can make that, so I need to get on his outside shoulder. They are slightly off, but it's how they go about fixing it. Do they settle on a side, or they're in the middle of a 2-year window to develop in reality, and people are always going to come back to this to, and it's crap even saying it, but everyone is on Irish rugby is going to look at this as a 4-year plan to the World Cup, and that's the reality of it. So people forget about the here and now and grinding out wins and winning that and winning Six Nations. It's like, well, it's the World Cup. That's what it's all about, you know?
And Johnny Holland, like I suppose the good example of what Johnny was talking about there was probably Ireland's second try, where Gary Ringrose makes the break from inside his own half off a kind of a bouncing ball. And within about half a second, Gibson Park has that pass out to Tadhg Byrne on the on the wing and he's popped it back inside to Mac Hansen. Like, by the time Gary Ringrose was on the ground, it seemed as if Gibson Park, or, you know, there were people over him and he was ready to make that pass. Like, that is the good example of resourcing that ruck to get the quick ball after the break.
Yeah, that he's just so good at that. Like you hear the term about scrum halves at the moment that they're stuck to the ruck, you know, that they're there and they're ready to play. And you kind of see that with maybe the lads who are lower in height. People think that they're the ones stuck to the ruck, the Craig Caseys of the world and Gibson Park. But like there's other nines that are just good at reading the play and getting into the ruck and getting the ball away. It's just the speed at which they get it away. But Gibson Park, like that is his whole game, isn't it? Like when the ball is available, he just takes it away. He doesn't wait for anything. He's not someone that you'd be looking at going, he's moving a leg or he's trying to dig for a ball. And that's twofold because that means the Irish player on the ground is pushing the ball back for him to have it. And he's just there straight away and he moves it before the ruck is actually even forming. But I think just to go back to it, like the ruck situations are never just the ruck. Like, you know, it's kind of, I always talk about it as a chicken and an egg. Like, what comes first? You know, so is it fast ball comes first and the ruck is easier, or do you make fast ball by clearing a ruck? You know, so it's, you know, you have to really go back to the very start of how you launch your first play. Do you get go forward? The game is easier no matter who plays what game plan when you go forward. So like if you pick the right player, if you obviously you can go into analysis here, but like if you just pick the right player to get go forward, give the right person the ball, win a collision and clear that ruck, the ball is faster, you're on the front foot and every ruck becomes easier after that until the collision is lost, you know. So like no one was talking about Ireland's ruck speed. Well, actually we were talking about it on the other side when they were going forward in contact. And when they were going into gaps and spaces and challenging defenses. And now that things are a small bit slower, I would say. Now you get a question about is the ruck resourced enough? It was resourced enough last year when they were flying around the pitch. So, you know, if you kind of you do wonder which one is causing it, but I wouldn't say that their ruck is an issue. It's more so the collisions maybe. And that's been a talking point as well, that they're not winning flat out collisions. And then I will go back to the point that, you know, I was maybe naively small but critical, I think. I'm not sure if I was really critical, but I remember saying that Ireland's attack wasn't really flow. I think I call it clunky back at the start of Andy Farrell's reign in attack, because no matter what you think about Mike Catt and Andrew Goodman, Andy Farrell has a massive stamp on this attack. So that's why I'm kind of unsure as to why it's getting a little bit more static. But obviously you do see little bits of change in there, and Andrew Goodman has to be doing something and Mike Catt had to be doing something. So you know, if we were critical of it in the last cycle, at the very start of it, and now we're at the start of another cycle, then let's maybe just get a chance to play out. But I think Johnny's right there in saying that, you know, maybe there's a, you're trying to get Sam Prendergast on the pitch. Obviously, Kieran Frawley, I don't really like to say it out loud that much because I've been a big fan of him and I don't want to put pressure on the guy, but he just didn't perform well last week. Like, and that's obviously going to affect your attack, you know? So, yeah, there's probably multiple factors when you look at a ruck being slow, but I don't think it's just to clear out itself.
To come back around to a couple of the other positives then from the weekend, and Johnny Holland, obviously you wrote your column this morning, your weekly column for RTÉ Sport, and obviously one of the things you picked out, which a lot of people would have as well, was the two debutants. Now, like I think we've spoken a lot about Sam Prendergast in the last couple of years. It wasn't really a surprise to anyone that he came on and, you know, looked fairly comfortable and confident and was happy to throw himself about the place. But I'd say for a lot of other people, there probably was a bit more relief in seeing how comfortable Tom Clarkson looked. Because ultimately, like, if you think about it, he was coming on Friday night as probably Ireland's fifth choice tight head. If you consider Tadhg Furlong, Finlay Beelam, Tom O'Toole and Ollie Yeager, who's been in the squad as well for the last year or so. So it was a huge step up for Thomas Clarkson. And I would say actually he played considerably better than I've seen him play in a Leinster shirt for a good while. I thought he was really, really good. You look at like he was a big part in one scrum penalty, and there was a huge, huge defensive moment as well where he didn't quite force the turnover, but he forced the bad pass that forced the turnover that I think James Lowe ultimately won as well. So he looked really, really keen and definitely up to the level.
I thought so. I was impressed by him. I think that defensive read was something that just shows a mindset and a comfort within a guy. He's obviously got a lot of reps, and for a tight kind of read out the back, and for it to be the right decision, and then force a turnover. That's when you're looking at that as a defensive coach, you'd be like, "This is class." You know, I can pick this guy again. And then obviously his bread and butter in the scrum, he held his own. Argentina But he held his own in there. And I just think, like, I don't think you can read from the TV a guy's demeanor or not, that kind of stuff. I have spoken on that. But I know when I was playing a couple of games, people would say, geez, you look so comfortable. And inside, you're not that comfortable. So, there is a front. I think maybe you'll go on to in a minute, the Sam Prendergast comfort. I don't think that's a front, but maybe that's for another time. Thomas Clarkson, it wasn't his static demeanor. It was actually his reactions to things, how comfortable he was seeming to be talking to people on the pitch. And that's what I thought was actually excellent. They seemed to be going in when they were fully ready. And yeah, we can get critical that people don't get a chance that early, but he's obviously fully ready. And I think someone like Ollie Jaeger won't be too happy, not being on the pitch because Thomas Clarkson just took it, and he's easier to select the next time,
Johnny, I might ask you more about Sam, obviously, considering you've known him down through the years and stuff like that. As Johnny says, he looks like someone who probably is more than comfortable and more than confident at that level. And Andy Farrell even kind of laughed about it as well before the game, saying that, he's had to be patient for his chance, probably more patient than he thinks he should have had to be. In Sam's mind, he probably should have been out there a year ago or something like that.
I'm not going to answer that question from messages that I've exchanged with him over the last 18 months. But anyway, like, look, Sam, his demeanor is that he is a confident young man that backs himself, but has incredible self-awareness around what he needs to work on, what he sees. He's very astute in how he reads the game, very diligent in what he does. Yeah, he has that inner belief. He played R20s a year young, and he's always looked that comfortable. Every level that he has been in, since I've been coaching him since he's 16, he has been that comfortable on a pitch, be it whatever team he's played for. And people are saying about his frame, and I know I'm biased, and his frame is his frame. Like, he's 21, okay? He's 6 foot
Like
three.
Johnny Sexton's frame when he was 23, 24, he wasn't a big player by any stretch of the imagination when he was coming through at that age.
Look, 6 foot three. Okay, he lacks a bit of weight, but, like, fine. You can work on that over a period of S&C. Do I think he's going to take over? Not now. I don't think he's going to take over now. Do I believe if he stays injury free? Yeah, I do. And I think that's just his level. But I think we can be in for an old battle in, maybe 6 to 9 to 12 to 18 months' time of a Humphreys O'Gara, Sexton. Like, why can't we be in for that? And why can't we look forward to it? And that's not putting pressure on either guy, or not excluding Kieran Frawley. But, like, no doubt, and Johnny, you know this, you want to have that battle. So, if you're Jack Carty, you want to be hearing, okay, well, Sam's doing this, and Sam, yeah, that's fine. Right, I'm going to do what I'm good at, and I'm going to run. I'm going to be add little things to my game. Kieran Frawley the same. Like, guys, if you're, guys who are professional athletes, they want that battle, and let's enjoy it. But make sure, and there's, guys that are getting the opportunity. Guys are going to get the opportunity. They're going to be backed by the provincial coaches. They have been backed by the Irish coaches, and we're in a spot at 10 now where we have a few options. All have performed to a level. Okay, Sam's only performed for 20 minutes, but people would be like, oh, well, he can't play against Fiji. I was like, start him against Fiji, and then make a decision on what's what against Australia and see how you go. And
I said that, didn't I?
what?
I said that about Fiji, but
Yeah.
I was going to ask you. Physically, he's 21, is he? And he is tall, so it makes him look more slender than, like, he. Those guys can carry more weight than you expect, but he's 21. So no one expects him to be physically developed yet. And obviously, let's not turn this into Cork on Newbridge, like Jack Crowley throws it around physically. So does Kieran Frawley because he's played at 12 a lot. And I think when you're an international coach picking that side, you need to have the seam shored up. And I think Jack threw himself about on Friday night. But you're not picking your 10 because of physicality. If they leave a door open, fair enough, it might be hard to select him at times. But is there a small bit of, I wouldn't say minding him, because he's obviously played URC, he's well able, but the Fijian physicality is something that you could just get a ferocious hit and, you know, got a dunt on top of the AC joint or something, you know, that I'm not medically qualified to talk about, and he's out for 6 weeks, we'll say. But is that minding him too much?
Yeah, like they're saying he's ready, so he's ready. Like, you know, like he's a professional rugby player, and like if he's playing for Ireland, he's played against one of the top, okay, the world rankings are the world rank, but like Argentina are one of the top five teams, no doubt. Like, they're a really, really good team. They've beat everyone this year, you know, probably bar Ireland. And like, so if they're worried about him physically, well, then he's not ready. So if everyone is saying he's ready and they feel that, well, let's go. Like, you
I
know.
think just on that as well, you know, you can play that very cleverly if you give him 30 minutes. We'd say, sorry, that's what my point was on the column this morning. 30 minutes is another bit of substantial game time, and you don't get the Fijians out of the blocks, I suppose, is what my point was. But also, Kieran Frawley, I think, should get a chance to right some wrongs because he's been pretty good for Ireland, like, hasn't he?
Yeah, like to be honest, I would, I thought that what my selection would have been that I thought Frawley, I thought they were all going to start one and then they'd flip it, then get 20 minutes for each one off the bench, and then make a decision on you know, against Australia and right, these are our one and two after this 4 weeks. And then, guys, you're going to go back to your province and away you go. Now, obviously, that might change now because I would doubt, bar an injury, you're probably going to start Sam against Australia. So that opportunity might be here. But then Frawley doesn't get a start. And then if he's not involved, he's not potentially not involved in Australia. So it's just trying to manage that dynamic. But yeah, like, look, we've all played against Samoans, played with. Sorry, Fijians and Samoans and Islanders, and you don't want to train against them, never mind play against them. So, like, but you know, you have to, and it's part of it. Is he smart enough to, you know, like his way of playing is that he's going to get belted on the line, unfortunately. He is different to Jack Crowley and Kieran Frawley in terms of how he brings, is he going to make a 50 meter break? He'll tell you he will, but he's probably not. But what he is going to do is he's going to put someone in a hole for a 50 meter break. Jack Crowley might run a, you know, something very simple, duck someone under, and then he's off his outside foot and he's gone for that 50 meter. Same with Kieran Frawley, but they can play multiple positions. They can play 12 and 15 if needed be. Sam is a 10. That's it. That's where he is. So, but he has a different style in that. You know, his double pump on the line you see the other night, that's what he does. It's how he brings people in. It's his consistent movement out the back. Like one of the guys in school said, why, like, Sam doesn't play 10. He's in behind the shape all the time. Like, yeah, but that's what he does. His movement out the back is actually making it an easier carry for someone in the front line. And so he's a different type of player. And I think that's a really good thing. But like, you know, Jack Crowley is number one here. And it's not as big a distance as it was pre-autumn, but he is number one. So the other lads are chasing that jersey. So it's a fight, you know, and no one, it's okay to have this conversation about the guys having it and not be, you're knocking, you know, Cor Conn are going to abuse me because I'm knocking one of their own. I'm not. He is number one in Ireland. He's shown that. He's proven that. And, you know, if you want to, and all the Leinster people might be giving out to me, you know, but like, and my mates in St. Mary's, but like, there's an argument that Jack should have potentially come on against New Zealand back at, you know, 18 months ago. So why, but it's okay to have this conversation and let's sit back and enjoy it. And right, lads, away you go.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's actually the thing I'm kind of getting from it the more you're talking here, where I think in the last week or so, because of the tribal nature of it being a bit of a Munster v Leinster thing, for some reason it's kind of this argument or debate has come across as being like a negative thing that like we don't know who the out, you know, who our best out half is or whatever. But the more I'm hearing the 2EE talk about it, for example, like this is coming across like it's a very, very exciting thing for Irish rugby going forward, where there are multiple very, very promising options at out half. Granted that, you know, neither of them or neither or none of them will say, if you're including Ciarán Frawley as well, to be more than two, they don't have a huge amount of international experience. But like Johnny Holland, I might put it to you, like that all three are very exciting options.
Yeah, I think the tribal thing is right, and maybe my view is warped because sometimes you get it on, I still call it Twitter, on X. You just see provincial opinion, you know, and it can warp what you think is actually going on out there. But like, people ask for change, and then Jack Crowley comes off, but not that change. You know what I mean? It's like we've asked for guys to get game time, and you bring, you know, a 21-year-old on for 18 minutes. You can't, like, Sam Prendergast is thinking, Jesus, I got 18 minutes, and everyone else in Munster is saying, that was 18 minutes too short for Jack Crowley. Let him play. You know, like we want it. We want change. We want competition. And like Jack Crowley is allowed to come off and shake his head. I don't know, was it because he kicked one out on the full or whatever it was, but like he obviously wants more touches of the ball. Just that kind of player anyway. He'd go home with the ball, you know. But like I think our conversation is joking about Cork on a Newbridge, but like we want to see how good Sam Prendergast can be. And Jack needs to beat that. And if Jack can't beat that, then he knows himself he needs to. Because I don't think the players are involved in any of that conversation. But I do feel for Ciarán Frawley. I've been a fan of him. And it'll be interesting because when you saw, you know, that Jack went into the Irish team ahead of Joey Carberry and then Munster's hand was possibly forced, I'm not sure what's going to happen at Leinster here when two of their out halves, maybe not even out halves, are in the Irish squad. And then you've got the two Burns. And Charlie Tector back at Leinster. That'd be an interesting conversation, you know. And well done for not making this a Jack Crowley, Sam Prendergast conversation, Neil.
I know, yeah, we've probably milked a good 15 minutes out of it now. I've been waiting for an opportunity to move on the conversation, but you keep making good points, unfortunately. Do you know what? I'll take the opportunity to do it now since you've opened the door for me. Because I think we will be having this conversation more and more down the line. I'm going to move on to one of the bad things from the weekend. And you've both kind of mentioned it, but we haven't got into it so far. Obviously, the discipline. 13 penalties conceded. That's 13 for the second week in a row. Looking through it even deeper, though, lads, like there's just so many things that jump out about it. Ireland have conceded nine yellow cards in their nine games in 2024. So a card a game so far in 2024. In the previous 29 matches Ireland played, they gave up three yellow cards. So they have gone from giving up just under a card every 10 matches to a card every game. They've conceded 66 points in the last three games. 54 of those points have just been three-pointers off the tee. So their defense is probably the best in the world. They've conceded, I think, is it 13 tries in nine games so far this year. They have the best, they have the lowest points conceded per 22 entry at around 1.6 or 1.7. That was just prior to the Argentina match. But they are conceding a shipload of points off the tee, and that's completely undermining the defense. Unsurprisingly, then, as well, they've given up the highest percentage of penalties between the halfway line and their own 22. So I was looking at this, these are the numbers like from before the Argentina game. I don't have the updated version, but before the Argentina game, 46% of the penalties Ireland have conceded in 2024 have been between the halfway line and their own 22. The going rate for most of the other top tier countries in the world is between 25 and 35%. So, like, when you're giving away that many penalties just inside your own half, like it just feels like it's completely undermining the defense. And we saw how good the defense can be on Friday evening as well, where late in the first half they had a huge goal line stand, and you know it could have been a very, very different game had Argentina gone in and scored there just before half time. Granted, they came out and actually, like, you know, got all the points of the second half anyway. But then at the end of the game, obviously Ireland under so much pressure inside their own 22 and held firm. So when their defense is really put up to it in the tight moments, it's standing up. But the problem is, games could be a hell of a lot easier for them if they could just cut down their penalty count. I
Yeah, but
don't
I
know
think
who
it's.
wants to come in on
Yeah,
that.
no, I just wanted to say, like, it's possibly another thing. Like you're saying, their defense is very good. It is, but why are the penalties being conceded? Like, there's offside. There's Ireland have been iffy in the breakdown for quite a while. And I say iffy, they've been very good there, in defensive breakdowns. But Doris got caught for two offsides, two in a row, didn't he? And I think it was Argentina's poor choice of tap and go penalty, I thought, that allowed them not to score, that allowed Ireland out
Well,
just
I
before.
suppose then could you counter me by saying Ireland are giving up the fewest number of points, et cetera, because teams are just taking threes constantly rather than going for the corner.
That's what I mean. Like, your defense is on that kind of edge where, like, a couple of penalties, it could be like penalties normally happen because of pressure. They're not all silly. Pressure mounts and you give away a penalty, you get offside or whatever it is. So it's very hard to. Now, I understand what you're saying, by the way. When it's attack, defense, no penalty, they come out on top most of the time. But like when you give away penalties, that's a defensive loss. I don't know the stats on every penalty, but you know what I'm saying? There was two or three just before half time, there were defensive penalties. Like, so you have to take them into account as well. And which one comes first, you know?
I do think that there is an element that there are some penalties that are really silly. Like James Lowe's push, that's out of frustration. He feels, oh, I don't have a clear window there, but he's never going to actually get into contest. So it's a shove that's not needed. Joe McCarthy's one for me is kind of silly because he can see when he scans left and right that he is clearly 2 feet ahead of his defender on his inside and outside. There's the ones in the what I'd call as red zone or green zone when you're attacking, those offside ones, they're hard because you need to be on that line to try and win a contact there to stop them getting over. So they're difficult, but it's those silly ones, the Velam roll away the week before, the Henderson, no release. They're the ones that are a bit of a killer, because they're 100% controllable. The other ones where you're on the line, they're okay. They're part of the game. And sometimes, as you say, Neil, they can be smart because it's three instead of seven, or as it was just before half time, which probably as it played out was the winning of the game, it was zero. They didn't get anything from those. And now it did lead to a yellow card. And I thought that was really good refereeing, actually, to be fair. He gave a warning and it wasn't reset at half time. The warning held through, which I think was actually really good. And I don't know whether those silly penalties are coming from I want to try harder. And sometimes trying harder is not actually smarter. It can, and that's, is that a, and as you say, it's been over the last year. Is that, and look, that's for sports psychology, sorry, is it a World Cup hangover or is it they didn't get a Grand Slam? Is it we need to be better here and we have to be doing this? And that's the pressure of being so good for so long that, they can get frustrated over these little things that, but I do think it is, you take away those three or four or five silly penalties that they give away every game. There's at least three, if not four. Then you're down to single digits. That stops four entries into your 22, into your 10 meter. That's what they're adding up to those threes.
It's funny,
But
like.
sorry, Ned, you said before about Jack Nienaber when he came into Leinster, is he happy to give away certain penalties to have aggressive defence? And what Johnny's saying is probably yes. The one that I thought the Finlay Beelan won, the crock roll, that one was amateur enough, was it? I thought like he's got in a poor position and then hung on and he knows he can't, like.
The whole thing for me on the crock roll, and it's same across all levels, is that like if you're on a clear out, if you're on someone's back, you just have to let go now. You can't continue through. So you've missed. It's poor technique. And my big thing, same on the tackle height. If it's poor technique, penalize it. And if it's a yellow card, fine, it's a yellow card because it's poor technique. So if you're on someone's back in a clear out, that's crap technique. You should be penalized. And they are the ones that at that level, getting on someone's back and then continuing through, you should have enough awareness that shit, I'm on someone's back here. Right, release, go. And that is for me, you're right, Johnny. I think that's a bit of a silly one,
I got away with one on Saturday, actually. I was playing.
You didn't get speed into the rough lane, obviously.
I found myself in a bad
Jay,
position, and
Jack, excite you,
I just
excite
fell over to the side. Ref didn't see it, but
you.
your man retaliated, and the ref didn't see that either. So I got my dues, in fairness. But one thing to come back on the discipline, and Johnny, like you mentioned, like a possible World Cup hangover on it. And I might put it to whoever wants to come in. Is there a possibility that it is in some way related to kind of looking back? Have Ireland kind of decided that maybe were they actually a little bit too honest in the previous couple of years? And are they just, have they decided to step up and take a few more chances here or there, or push the boundaries ever so slightly, and they're struggling to find the middle ground between the two? That's just something that kind of popped into my head over the last year, where you're seeing so many more yellow cards for repeated infringements, that maybe they're trying to see how far they can go, but they're obviously just struggling to get the middle ground.
Yeah, I don't know. Ireland seemed clean enough before, but I thought they were like, I think every other opposition nation is like, what is going on in their breakdown? How is Doris engaging it at the front and then just whipping around the side? I don't know. They had that kind of reputation of not giving away that many, but I'd say if you went through the video, you'd be given out as an opposition coach. But I don't know if they're trying. Johnny, what do you think? I don't think you can try to go on that line a bit more, because it's just going to be penalties, like.
Yeah, no, I do think they're trying a lot more in their second efforts in the contact. And you saw over the last couple of weeks, they're getting some really good barrage or counter ruck opportunities and going past the butt. They've done that quite well. And you see sometimes, like, and it's still legal in terms of if they win a contact, they're actually putting their foot in again, which we used to do when we played, but they're trying to hook it back. And they know they're not going to get anything out of it, but it's causing an extra second or two because someone else has to come in and clean them out. I think they have doubled down on that, but I don't think so. I think it's just the silly penalties are a bit of a killer for them at the moment. And maybe that's something that is, they're trying to be a bit smarter and a bit slower, but in actual fact, they're not, it's not in any way, it's really hurting them, you know?
Well, I did find it interesting. This was the first week where Andy Farrell really actually kind of addressed it. Like all through this season, it's kind of been brushed over a little bit, or like, it's something we'll work on, et cetera, et cetera. But I did see when he was doing his kind of straight after full time interview with Virgin Media on Friday night, he said our discipline was desperate at times. And I remember we were waiting for the press conference to happen in the media room in the Aviva, and someone was just playing that on their laptop, so we could get a sense of what his thoughts were. And when he said that word desperate, a handful of people actually kind of went like, whoa, jeez. It seemed so out of the norm. So I do think it's something that has really actually been addressed now. And I'm interested to see how it goes both this week and next week as well, because I think you can't really just judge it off one match. It has to be a sustained thing. We're running out of time. Briefly, I might get your idea on a couple of changes maybe, or a couple of things you'd like to see this week. Against Fiji. Obviously, team is going to be named on Thursday. We'll get a sense, I suppose, of what fitness things are in play, if there are any later injuries a little bit later on today when Ireland are up for media. But is there anything you'd like to see in terms of changes, or people getting a chance, or are there people you'd like to see definitely keep their places this week to just get another run?
I think there's like, you won't see, well, I don't think you'd see all these changes. I think Andy Farrell has probably made, was there five or six changes one week, and we all said, geez, that's a lot for him. So you might see that again, because I think off the top of my head now, like, I think Calvin Ash could get a game. Jacob Stockdale isn't undeserving of a game. And then Jamie Osborne, I think, has to play in the centre.
I think as well, sorry to interrupt, I do think as well, Farrell's never usually a fan of making sweeping changes, but it's very rare where he's had four games in consecutive weeks. So if ever there's an opportunity where he might actually make a good few changes for a game, it could be this.
Yeah, but I think, possibly agree as well. But I think the whole point around bringing fellas in and not giving them the same opportunity, because there's so many changes, I think that's kind of where he goes with it anyway. So it'll be interesting to see if there's more changes because of four games, but it's still taking the opportunity of the consistency away from those guys that play, because you can't really judge them on the merit of it anyway. But like, Jack won't start at 10. I'd be nearly convinced of that, but I'm not picking the team. And then, Jameson Gibson-Park, at times I thought he won't start, but yet he gives that certainty for the 10 that's going to play. So I'd love to see something in the back five, Cormac Isichukwu or Cian Prendergast. I'd love to see one of the two of them getting a right go. Maybe Cian Prendergast is the one. He's maybe not next. Is Nick Timoney next? But I do think I'd love to see him, one of the two of them, get a crack. Maybe it's only one of them because of their position. And then will Thomas Clarkson get a start? That'd be a nice one.
What do you think,
Yeah,
Johnny Murphy?
Yeah, but I think Cian Healy definitely starts anyway, given he's breaking the record. I actually think Pete has been really good in terms of his energy and stuff, like his body language when he's been on the pitch, has been like he looks refreshed and real eager and keen, you know, just in terms of his body language when he's been on the pitch the last 2 weeks for the last 15, 20 minutes. He might be someone if your ref Darce, does he come on? And then he's captain with, you know, Keane potentially at eight. But I'd like in the back line, the three ones for me would be I'd like Craig Casey to start, Sam to start, and then Jamie Osborne definitely to start in the centre. And but then if you go down that way, are you going to change the whole back line? It's I don't think it's going to be a case that there's going to be 15 starting changes, but we've just spoken about eight or nine there, so it is actually possible for him to go, right, we have a new 15. It's not going to happen, but there is, I do think we will see a few more changes than people think, because this is a second last game before he goes on the Lions. We're going to go into a Six Nations where they'll be really settled, but then you're going into a summer tour where it's going to be big change. So this is the last opportunity within the 2 year block to give guys a real good whack at home, before there's a lot of settled period, and then into a Lions year might be something that he looks at.
Yeah, and then obviously, like you're factoring in the minutes of the first couple of games as well, and you'd look at maybe someone like Josh van der Vleer, who has got through a ludicrous amount of work in those first two matches and will obviously be vital for Australia. You know, the logical thing would be, do you know what, give him a week off or something like that. And last point I do want to mention, I'll come back to Jamie Osborne actually, because he was someone I did want to mention a little bit earlier, but we kind of ended up getting away from it. And I thought he was absolutely fantastic when he came on. Unfortunately for him, like the stats will show he gave away two penalties, but like they were two penalties that he gave away because he made an unbelievable carry and didn't have the support with him to help him out, where he obviously just gets caught holding on. But I thought he had a huge impact when he came on in the second half.
I don't think coaches will look at those stats, and like they look at stats, yes, but not in that way, you know. So like I think he came out of that with a lot of credit, and you know, I
And
thought him.
Andy Farrell did actually, like, he name checked him
Yeah.
afterwards, said, I thought he was immense,
That's what I was going to say,
was what
because
Farrell
Andy
said.
Farrell actually seemed a bit frustrated during the game, but I don't think he looks as animated as that normally, and he did definitely look as well, but more frustrated looking from the outside in. But then to heap praise on Jamie Osborne. That was purposeful, like I think, and he was fully deserving of that as well, by the way. But Johnny, I don't know if you can change 9, 10, 12. You know, that's where I think he's going to cut his cloth accordingly. Like you might change, if you change Osborne and you want Sam to start, then I think James at Gibson Park will probably start. You know, so I think you have to give him the platform that he deserves when he starts that game. I think if you play Craig Casey with Jamie Osborne, then you might play Frawley, you know, but you could do this anyway, Neil. It depends on what his priorities are. He'll have four or five or six changes in there probably, and it depends on which ones he thinks are going best or deserve that the most. I just think Stockdale has been spoken about quite a bit, and left-legged option James Lowe can't play every game, can he? You know what happens if he doesn't, so that'd be a nice one. But you could change around the back five in the pack without ever getting weaker, like Ryan Baird. I don't know, is he available or not?
I'd say my guess would be probably not if he came off with the HA, because he'd only have to just kind of recently coming back from a head injury as well. So we don't know for definite. I reckon the layoff would be a bit longer for him. He might have, unfortunately, which is really unfortunate because he's had so little game time this season.
Yeah, I hope he's okay, because he just gives Ireland such a different aspect, you know, be it sixer in the second row in terms of his pace, and the options he can give you in the wider channels when he gets that ball, like is insane. So, and I'd hope that he is okay over a period of rest, and fingers crossed, because he's a game changer for Ireland when he gets ball in space.
Absolutely is. Well, fellas, look, it's been great having you on today, and we'll have you on again very soon. We'll be back for another podcast later on in the week, probably Thursday evening after the Ireland team is announced for Saturday. A reminder, Saturday's game against Fiji, live commentary on RT Radio 1 as well. So we'll speak to you on Thursday's podcast. Johnny, thanks a million for joining us. We'll see you again soon.